Hello and welcome along to another episode of Manx Radio's newscast. I'm Christian Jones, and in this episode, we're exploring a story that's prompted serious questions about how we vet candidates for public office and whether the current rules and processes go far enough to protect public confidence in local government. Over the weekend, Camille Kataya posted a personal account online detailing her experience as a landlord, an account that quickly gained traction. She alleged that a former tenant, John Hamilton, left her Douglas property damaged and owing thousands in unpaid rent. That tenant, it turned out, had just been elected to Onchan District Commissioners and appointed as lead member for housing. Court records confirmed that in 2017, Mr. Hamilton was ordered to repay nearly £13,000 to Mrs. Kataya following a civil case. She says she hasn't received a penny. The story has since raised wider concerns, not only about that individual case, but about how candidates are screened, whether local authorities have the tools to properly assess someone's suitability, and what happens when serious allegations resurface after an election. John Hamilton resigned from his role just days after the post went public. He said it was to protect the integrity of the authority and avoid distraction, and has since made no further public comment. Camille Kataya spoke with me just hours before he resigned to talk more about what happened, how the experience affected her, and why she decided to speak out.
The first thing that happened was I went into shock. It brought back all the emotions that I faced when I had to deal with him as a tenant back in 2016 and 17. We have a house in Douglas and we put it up for rent. And we were delighted when we met Mr. Hamilton because he comes across as a lovely family man with a partner and a child and his own self-employed business. And he seemed like the perfect tenant. So when he wanted to rent out the house, we'd agreed the rent, we'd agreed on everything he wanted to do. He asked me if he could stay with us for 5 years, and if I'd give him a 5-year contract. I knew that the legislation started to get a bit awkward about long-term contracts, so I told him he's more than welcome to stay 5 years, but it will be on an annual contract, and I would renew the annual contract, and I agreed I would also not increase the rent for those 5 years. He also turned to me and said, well, would you be interested in selling? And I said, no, we're not interested in selling. He said, but if you sell, will you give me first priority? I said, sure. If we do decide that we want to sell, we will happily give you first priority. I said, but the truth is, it's unlikely we will want to sell because the plan might be when we are older and the children are older, we might want to move back to the house. Anyway, the tenancy started and along with it, all the problems started happening, starting from his not paying rent and instructing work to be done that wasn't approved, saying one thing to me and a different thing to my husband. For example, he came to me and he said that the people who serve as the boiler said that the boiler needed to be changed. So when I checked with the company, EMS, they confirmed that the boiler's 10 years old, but it doesn't need to be changed. It's fine. And if it needed to be changed, they would have told me. John put up quite a bit of an argument saying, look, we're here for 5 years. We might like to buy the house. We'd like to change the boiler. And I said, well, there's no reason to change the boiler because this is in good condition. He somehow ended up agreeing to pay for it. So he went to EMS and said, oh, please change the boiler. So EMS actually called me up while he was at them and he said, do we have permission to change the boiler? I said, look, if he wants to change the boiler, I'll give him permission, but he has to pay for it. But to cut a long story short, He didn't pay for it. I ended up coming to an agreement and paying for it. All the extras that were with the boiler were removed by EMS because he refused to pay them. There were other matters, and EMS also took him to court. So from there, you could start seeing other problems. I then started having tradespeople coming to me asking me for payment because he said that I would pay for works to be done, which I hadn't agreed to. There were some things I had agreed to, but whenever we asked for an invoice, we weren't given an invoice. We were told, I want X amount of money, but it didn't line up with what we were anticipating, so we insisted on the invoice, which never happened. He barely paid any rent, and after several months of no rent, we ended up taking him to court. We gave him plenty of time to leave the property or to start paying, and he could remain. But he was very adamant that he was not leaving, and he was not going to pay us until we paid the small sum of money, which, even though they were larger than we anticipated, was still less than a month's rent. So if anything, he could have withheld 1 month's rent, but he didn't. There were several problems. Right from the very first month, he did not pay.
And there's a long history of him not paying rent or paying rent excessively late, and in some cases, only paying almost half of what he owed.
Yes, we sometimes got just little bits of money just so that he could say he's paid something. And he kept coming up with stories, so we kept giving him time. But in the end, it got to be a bit too much, so we served him a notice to evict. And we told him, look, if you pay us what you owe us, you know, we'll drop the case. But he was adamant that he wasn't going to pay us. And we took him to court, eventually got him evicted. And that's when it got even worse, where in the end, he literally destroyed the house, from taking the cooker with him to pulling off out all the carpets, the underlay, to removing all the light fittings, cutting off electricity cables, removing the shower, the wash hand basins in the bathroom. It was quite horrific.
And I have the court order in front of me. They ruled that he would owe you the sum of £12,871.02. How much of that have you received back?
We've not actually received a penny. In fact, the police told us we could go after him civilly for all the damage he's done. But we knew from having spoken to the coroners, we weren't going to see a penny of that £12,800. Or so pounds, because there were a list of creditors ahead of us. And he
so wasn't, this isn't an isolated case then?
It isn't, no. From something I read on one of the comments on my post, there are currently around 35 creditors in total.
And he is now the chair of housing at Onchan Commissioners.
I feel I strongly agree with Onchan Commissioners. They say that their people need to have 7 points, which are selflessness, integrity, objectivity, accountability, openness, honesty, and leadership. At the very least, you can look at honesty, and he is not an honest man. I would also call into question his integrity, his objectivity, his selflessness, his accountability. He is not a person who should be there. He has access to a lot of sensitive information. He has access to the housing department for Onchan Commissioners. And if he can treat my house like that, these aren't even his properties. Well, how's he going to treat them?
And when you do kind of like a due diligence process as a landlord, I know this particular order, it's not published. I had to go to the courts and I had to speak to them and effectively ask them to send it to me. But when I was doing some searches on the court's website, there aren't any others as well, that, as far as I can see. So does that hinder you from a landlord perspective in being able to do due diligence on potential tenants?
I think it's actually quite scary because I did several searches on him before we rented to him. And it was a rosy picture. You know, he seemed like the ideal tenant. And after we went through court and we went to the bailiff and we found out that we were not the first, we wanted our case to be published. We wanted our case to be out there. And we actually contacted the person in charge of small claims and civil summary team. And we were told that these cases they aren't all published. And I think that's actually quite a scary thought, because he has many cases, from what I understand. In fact, there's a second case where I gave testimony, which was after my own court case, to show that this is not the first time he's done it. And that case is not publicly available either.
And do you think that represents some almost wider considerations when people can run for public office but have an alleged history behind them? What do you think that says to the way that the public office system works?
I think in every case, the people who are representing us should be honest people. They should be able to stand up and speak, knowing they are doing the right thing. But if your beliefs and your ideologies and your understanding is so skewed, you can't be a good representative. So anyone in public office should have due diligence done on them. And at the end of the day, if someone has made a mistake, that can be forgiven if there's atonement. But if they are refusing to acknowledge it, intentionally continuing to cause harm, there's no excuse for that. They should not be in a public office.
If you were in the room with him right now, what would your message be to him?
You should have treated us with respect, and you should treat everyone you work with respect. You have completely and utterly taken advantage of people, including people who couldn't afford it. And that's wrong. You should be held accountable.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.